Yeah, I mean, I know this looks like a panel, but it's fireside because someone told me they hate panels, so we're gonna call this a fireside. And then Jameson was added just now, and my intro was gonna be something about like we're not devs, we're like the liaisons between devs. But now
you blew it.
Yeah. Oh, turn your mics on. Is everybody's mics on?
Yes.
Okay. This might be a little bit rote, but can you do a little intro on yourself for anybody who's not already aware?
Hi, everybody. I'm Ryan Gentry. I'm the head of business development at Lightning Labs. Lightning Labs, for people that are unfamiliar, is building the premier implementation of the Lightning Network, LND, in Go. We're also working on the Tapered Assets protocol, bringing stablecoins to Lightning, and have been deeply involved in kind of protocol development as well, and are always interested in extending the boundaries of what's possible safely with Bitcoin and Lightning.
Jameson Lopp, I'm a co-founder at Casa. We basically specialize in helping people self-custody, individuals, enterprises, really just lowering the bar for people to get into a top-tier, highly vetted and thought-out security model.
I'm Jay Bedecht. I'm the VP of Research at Foundry. We're the largest by name pool, as well as a Bitcoin mining technology provider. And I also support the Bitcoin Consensus Analysis Project, which is relevant to today's conversations around, just analyzing previous hard and soft forks.
That's pretty cool because you guys represent a pretty broad cross-section of, I would say, like fairly technically consensus familiar Bitcoin stakeholder organizations and participants. What are some of your reflections or things which you have heard these past 2 days which pique your curiosity or make you think? Has your mind changed on anything, or does your outlook on the current soft fork discussion, has it changed at all?
I'm going to caveat this. Thoughts still forming. But I'm generally fairly conservative with my views on altering Bitcoin protocol, very conscious of it as a miner. Historically, that's been a little bit dicey. I am openly and avowedly pro Stratum V2. But having talked to Shinobi, I think that check template verified check sig from Stack is going to do more for decentralizing Bitcoin mining than Stratum V2. And I think Stratum V2 is a necessary step to get to that even more decentralized state. But now I know what I want to work on when we're done with Stratum V2. So I think that's been pretty cool to see that.
What do you guys think when you hear him say that?
Very spicy. But I don't disagree at all, even though I'm not intimately involved in mining. I think we see actually a very similar thing in the Lightning community, which, Kevin just talked about, kind of issues with deploying self-custodial Lightning setups, Lightning wallets. And one of my favorite examples for this is the Mutiny team. And like the Mutiny team, for those that remember, they built a self-custodial wallet on LDK. Ben, Tony, and Paul are in Austin. They're my friends. Love what they did. Really, support them taking a big crack at it. And they, excellent engineers, I think, did a great job building a wallet, but just kind of ran into the economic reality that it's really, really hard to make money and build an economically sustainable self-custodial Lightning wallet business, right? Like that is just, I think of kind of Bitcoin consensus rules as like laws of physics, right? And like, at some point you just can't fight gravity that long, right? And I think that's something that we've seen really difficult in the space is building these kind of retail self-custody tools with which I would kind of put decentralized, self-custodial peer-to-peer mining pools in that bucket is just really hard with Bitcoin the way it is today. And I do think that, we kind of need to, tweak the laws of physics, so to speak, to kind of open up what's economically possible and economically viable to build with Bitcoin.
Well, I think we're in a bubble. I confirmed that we're in a bubble because no one tried to rip my head off after I suggested even considering thinking about changing the block size in Bitcoin. I think there's a lot of like-minded people in this room, basically innovators, people who are open-minded to considering changes to Bitcoin to try to solve problems. Basically, people in here tend to be humble enough to admit that Bitcoin is not perfect and that there are a number of short, medium, and long-term potential improvements to the protocol, to the network, to the game theory of the ecosystem. We are all stakeholders, different types of stakeholders, even on this very stage. As a result, I think that there is more consensus forming that perhaps there were too many proposals going on and that we need to consolidate and maybe some people need to make some concessions and basically, you know, concentrate what we're trying to get activated so that we can continue building. But, I think the primary thing is that a lot of us, at least in this room, are just getting concerned or frustrated that it feels like there's a lot of good ideas out there, but that we're not making the progress and the advancement that we want.
You gave me a layup here, Jameson, which is like, so yesterday we had Rick Schoenberg, not Rock Schoenberg, as I tweeted by accident. Rick Schoenberg, head of Coinbase Custody, talked about, he said, we would listen to our clients. If our clients want to request something, like if they request us to advocate for a soft fork or provide a feature, we'll do that. But we were talking before this, and I asked, you know, you, Ryan, and Jay, like, when have your clients ever, like, actively requested that for you? I think in mining, this might be pretty, you rarely see this, if ever. What are your thoughts?
It's few and far between, and I say this as a miner, so I'm not consulting our customers, but generally they're more focused on the low level operational considerations of staying above water. Mining economics are always bad, even if fees are high. And a lot of times, more recently we've had people ask some questions about things like OpCat, BIP 300, 301, how does that impact me? Can we do this? I think we can get more revenue. And then, they'll go down the rabbit holes and form their opinions. But I mean, looking at Taproot activation, so I was at Foundry for that, and I was much more earnest, still paranoid, but, I'm excited to talk to clients about it and found that, I guess apathy is the right word. Technically, I don't think folks were like, dismissive, but they didn't fully gronk it and they weren't particularly interested. They wanted to keep mining. They wanted to have better stale share rates. Make sure that their accountants understood what the mining side of stuff was. Going through the Taproot upgrade, certainly less contentious than some of the stuff we're talking about now, and absolutely less contentious than another block size change. I think that was a different time. And I think now we'll probably see more interest. But again, I think at least from the mining stakeholder perspective, there's really, they got to focus on staying alive before they can look at the luxuries of, okay, well, how could we improve this? And yeah.
You said a trigger word for me, apathy. I believe that apathy is in fact the greatest long-term threat to Bitcoin. And so, the fact that we are all here is a good sign. But due to the way that this system is set up, it's very easy for people just to sit back and say, oh, somebody else will take care of that problem. But at the end of the day, somebody else has to come together and try to do something. And so, this is the let's try to do something crowd rather than let's just wait and hope that everything works out.
I really liked, to answer your question, I really like Reardon Code's framing earlier of talking about, opcodes in terms of new capabilities they introduced. And the reason why I start with that is, have I ever had a customer or a Lightning developer ever come up to me and be like, can you please give me CTV channels? Like, no. Have I had, Lightning developers and users come up to me and, complain about how restrictive the developer and user experience is with self-custodial Lightning? Like, yes, absolutely. And I want to extend that beyond just Lightning, because I wrote a blog post for Bitcoin Magazine last fall talking about assessing the last mile solutions for Lightning. So raise your hand if you know what the last mile problem is. It's actually pretty good. So for those that don't, the last mile problem is like a well understood economical problem where, you know, if you're laying like roads or fiber or any sort of transportation network, you know, if you're laying fiber in the middle of a city, every mile of fiber can support 100,000 people. And like the economics work out pretty well if they're all subscribing, paying your subscription fee. The last mile of fiber that you're laying out in the boonies, in, you know, the rural areas, you know, you may serve one or two customers. And so them paying for that last mile of fiber is, you know, doesn't make nearly as much sense economically as the dense areas. So I think we have the same, you know, I think the last mile of a lightning channel for a self-custodial user is the same economic problem, where it's just like not economically advantageous to serve that one user with that much capital and that much restrictiveness. And so I think things like Arc, things like BitVM enabled sidechains, you know, all of these kind of new ideas for, you know, things like channel factories, all of these kind of new ideas that could be enabled by, you know, a new software, things like CatVM, are ways to serve that demand from users for a Vettel and from developers for a Vettel kind of self-custodial Bitcoin experience that connects to the Lightning Network.
So much of the conversation that last op next, this op next, every time I hear the devs talk on Twitter spaces, every time I see devs talking on GitHub and whatever, everyone kind of agrees right now, like, we just want to figure out what the proposals are. We want to debate the proposals and then let the community, the stakeholders, kind of magically figure out how to activate. Because like, I actually kind of really enjoy all the devs here saying, I'm not really going to try to push for activation. There's a lot of gravestones and frustrating, fraught endeavors there. But like, does that mean that it's like, whose job is it? I know this is dumb and rhetorical, but implied in that is that it's someone kind of like us or in our position to bridge the gap into the more active stakeholder discussion.
Yeah, I mean, I think you do have to take the perspective of you can just do things, even though you can't just force things upon anyone. Someone has to just try to do things. If you look at the sort of arc of soft forks over the past few years, what I have noticed and taken away from it is that the debates have become like more and more precisely nuanced around the tiniest and tiniest minute details, where the Taproot debate was mostly not actually about Taproot. It was about how do we activate Taproot? And I think this is because there's so much PTSD still from the scaling wars, and potentially PTSD from developers being threatened legally and otherwise, that we had a core developer and maintainer panel at MIT last weekend. And my main takeaway from that is, like, you know, no one, especially in a maintainer position, but probably really anyone in a protocol developer position, wants there to even be the slightest chance that anyone in the world thinks that they have any sort of power to, you know, push any button and merge any code and really have any effect upon consensus. And so whenever we talk about consensus changes, we get into this standoff situation where no one wants to be the one who is actually seen as doing anything, even if a lot of us, like people in this room, want to collectively take some sort of action. It's a really weird situation. And unfortunately, I think that it means that some of us need to just get up there and be willing to take the abuse.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. And I remember in 2021, in, you know, the first CTV saga, which is very frustrating. I will say that the feedback has been very consistent from like the developer community, where they're like, look, yeah, Taproot kind of sailed through without there being a bunch of POCs and a bunch of code written leveraging it and a bunch of wallets, but like the bar is higher now. And we need kind of more proof and more demonstrable demand, especially if you don't have, you know, like a Peter Woola, you know, championing, you know, a specific soft fork, you know, proposal. And I think one thing that has been fantastic to see just this weekend is, you know, Jeremy in his initial presentation kind of showing all of the different people who have built POC code with CTV and CheckSig from Stack, all of the people who have posted on Twitter, you know, in favor of it. I think Rob, like, probably the biggest news this week was Robin Linus and the BitVM community coming out and saying, like, oh yeah, okay, CTV and CheckSig from Stack is the way to go. I'm convinced. And I think, you know, the repo that Harsha put together as well, kind of the awesome CTV CheckSig from Stack repo that just kind of puts all in one place all of the different implementations, the vaults, the payment pools, the yada, 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 all the different things that people have built with this tooling is really kind of building up to a critical mass where you can go and kind of demonstrate to core developers, like, look, this is what people want, right? Like, this has been vetted, this has been tested, this, you know, provides 10x improvements to things that people want to do. And I think we're a lot closer now than we have been in a while, just because people are actually building stuff. And I do think that that's kind of the bar for this next soft fork.
Well, first of all, it's kind of silly because there is no authority who can set the bar. Yep. What is this bar?
Well, it is.
This is a very ephemeral, hand-wavy thing. But I also caution that, you know, some of the stuff that I've been hearing about, well, we need to see that there's more market demand. That's kind of backwards. Like, this is not the way that technology evolves. Like, there was not market demand from the world for, you know, the internet. And I mean, you could find a million examples of that. I think when it comes, especially like to consensus protocol changes, the primary motivation should be, you know, can we add more functionality that can be used by someone? It shouldn't matter how many people want it. What should matter is, can we add the functionality without harming people and without disrupting the game theory and the stability of the system?
And to go back to the original question too, like, I rather a point made by Rob earlier, I think yesterday, you know, the market cap of Bitcoin is not materially, well, 30% is relatively material, but it's not like massively different than Taproot, but the user base is so much broader. And when you're forming consensus, like, that's the part that you have to worry about. So there's a lot more very loud people, you know, with opinions and viewpoints on the way to do things or the risks that things pose. And I think it's really hard, you know, to your point, there is no central authority to appeal to say, no, this is the way we're going to do it. And that's like the job of the community. And it's, you know, decentralized stuff is very hard for that reason. You can't have someone push things through. And I think historically we did see a lot more championing of these causes, but to, you know, Jameson's point, like, there's a lot more risk involved in that now as Bitcoin has grown and, you know, whether it's physical or legal violence that people were worried about, like, that's a very serious thing. And it's hard to ask that of folks. And I think one of the other factors too is, you know, Bitcoin is a less technical project now. And I don't mean that in the sense that, like, obviously the work that, you know, we're all doing is very technical, but there's so many more non-technical users, and to convince those stakeholders is more difficult. And then, you know, historically the champions of changes were technical, like core developers. You know, they knew their stuff, they knew who their audience was, but, you know, you're now asking someone whose skill set is may only be restricted, and I'm not trying to speak too broadly here, but, like, you know, to the development, to now, okay, now you're going to be a politician, and now you're going to have to form support from, you know, multiple different communities who some might hate you, some, you know, and that's a really hard task. And I don't have an answer, but I just think that's something that I've observed for these debates.
And just to build on what Jameson was saying, you know, about how we should introduce something if it adds meaningful new capabilities without causing any undue harm. You know, that's definitely how my mind thinks as well, from like kind of a offensive, let's go build more things perspective. But I think another perspective that's equally as valuable is from kind of a defensive kind of risk mitigation perspective, which is there a way that we can reduce some existential risks that exist to Bitcoin? And I think kind of like the two kind of removing tail risk from the Bitcoin protocol, and kind of the two that pop into my mind when I think about tail risk to Bitcoin is, you know, it's not super urgent, but at some point we do need to have a functioning fee market. You know, I am very anti-adjusting the block size. Thank you for your presentation earlier. But like, you know, I do think that there are additional capabilities we can add to Bitcoin Script that would meaningfully, you know, increase block space demand. The more that you can do with it, the more that it would be demanded. So I think that's kind of like, you know, one risk that Covenant Soft Fork would definitely help mitigate. And two, the other one that's always in the back of my mind is, you know, there's a lot of coins that are being hoovered up by custodians, you know, with ETFs, Coinbase custody, big exchanges, et cetera. 6102 is, you know, a risk vector that could absolutely happen, you know, in the event of a malicious government or malicious governments around the world. And so building kind of safer tools to provide the same custodial experience with vaults, but in self-custody and pulling some of those coins out of custodians, I think also is something that, you know, is in our power and we have the agency to mitigate that risk.
Yeah, I mean, 6102 attacks should always be talked about, though I think that there are other cases that are more likely that aren't as extreme. And let's look at our current government. They're getting very interested in Bitcoin. And yes, it's, I would say, overall a better environment than the previous administration. But let's not forget that one of the scariest phrases in the world is, I'm from the government and I'm here to help. And if the government is getting really interested in Bitcoin, especially if it gets more interested in holding and acquiring more Bitcoin, then you should take this to the logical conclusion that the government may very well be more interested in the governance and evolution of the protocol. And where are all the Bitcoin again? How does Bitcoin governance work? Something, something, economic nodes, something, something.
We're worried about the wrong layer twos.
Is a more scarier tweak on I'm from the government and I'm here to help? I'm here for the government and I'm here to pump your bags.
Right. Yeah. And so, I mean, I think I've had a post that was something to the effect of like, you have to understand that the number go up narrative is concerning because number can go up while some of the most valuable and precious properties of Bitcoin go down. And that is a very scary proposition just from thinking through the game theory and how that incentivizes people. I would hate to see a future where everyone is cheering that we're all getting richer while we're basically being shackled by our golden handcuffs.
Do you think activating a soft fork would be a step in a direction which reduces that scenario or that path, even temporarily?
I mean, there's no silver bullets, right? This is a multifaceted problem. But I do think in enhancing capabilities on chain to, you know, self-custody, I think is something that's just so critical. And like, it's, you know, I'm sure everybody here has tried to get a normie friend or relative, you know, onboarded. It's a pain and it usually ends up in, you know, Cash App or Coinbase, God forbid, you know, and no offense to Rick, I think Coinbase has done a lot for the space. You know, but that experience is difficult. And, you know, there are good self-custodial wallets, but there's, you know, people make mistakes and, you know, things like Miniscript are improving and Miniscript exists today, but augmenting that with some of these other capabilities, I think could be quite helpful to empower people to, you know, to take the custody of those assets. Because again, I do think that there's a real risk of, you know, the large economic actors can throw weight around, and whether or not they mean well, they have an obligation both, you know, fiduciarily and to, you know, their regulators to perform in a certain function. And so like that's a risk that like, you know, we can't control at the protocol level, but like if we can build tools and exit doors to help with that, I think that's important. And I mean, you know, from a mining perspective, again, I say this as someone representing, you know, one of the largest pools, but payment pools and like these tools to remove additional centralization risk out of the mining stack, I think is hugely important because you can do that without negatively impacting the economics of the folks who are mining too. Like those are some powerful tools that I think, you know, we didn't we didn't consider early on, and now it's starting to become a little clearer.
Yeah, so it is a very complicated problem. One other thing that concerns me is that whenever we're talking about protocol level improvements, I keep coming back to this issue, and it relates to my block size talk and the fact that, you know, there seems to be lower demand for block space than we've seen in a long time. And what that really means is there's lower demand for using Bitcoin in a self-custodial, permissionless fashion. Even as the price has gone up, I think that's mostly because it's been easier for people to onboard through various trusted third parties. And if that is the trend that continues, and then we're talking about, like, what is governance? How do we convince the market that it needs these things? The market doesn't care what the protocol can do if they never interface directly with the protocol. If everyone is using trusted third-party custodians, there is no need for them to have improvements at the protocol layer. And then who are the people you're convincing? You're convincing the handful of custodians, and they probably don't care that much either, especially if they're custodying a million different assets and they don't want to have to do, like, Bitcoin specific things.
Yep. I would only add, I think, two things to that. One is that, you know, I think a great quality of the Bitcoin community is being so passionate about, like, education and culture. I don't think that education and culture scale nearly as well as economic incentives, right? Like, if all of a sudden it is, cheaper, it is a better user experience, and you have, you know, some additional incentive for self-custodying your coins, like, more people will do that rather than being, like, harangued by their friend to, like, take your coins off Coinbase, take your friends, or take your coins off of Cash App. So I do think that, you know, the only way that we can adjust those really is with the soft fork, with kind of those incentives and introducing new tools. And so I think that, you know, I'm certainly very bullish on that. And the other thing is, you know, to Jameson's point, I gave a presentation a couple of years ago and I talked about, like, I think the big value add of Bitcoin, like, what I really hope it can become for the world, is to give everybody and anybody the freedom to save, you know, without being debased, the freedom to spend, and the freedom to earn. That's, like, the real hope. You can only do that if you really, you can really only do that if you hold your own keys and run your own node, right? That's really the only way you can do it. If you're trusting some third party, like, you're free to do those things at their behest, but they can, you know, always shut you down. And so I do think that that's, you know, it's really important to get that done and expand those freedoms and those capabilities, you know, sooner rather than later.
Each of you guys kind of represents, I would say, almost a different pillar of the, like, various kind of stakeholder universe. Are there barriers in your particular vertical that you see that could be reduced to a participant, say a pool or a self-custody provider or a Lightning development company? Are there barriers that could be reduced that you see that would let you be a little more forward in activation discussion? It's a spicy question, but I don't hear other people ask these things.
I think from an education perspective, folks are actually understanding how this has been done historically, right? There is no single path to activation, and it's kind of a crapshoot every time. But one thing that we've been seeing is a lot of discussion on BIP8 and BIP9 activation, and, like, people saying, oh, the pools are going to block it. You know, they won't let it. It's not up to us. That is the last port of call. Like, you have to have an activation client, or you have to have worked it into Core or some other, you know, mainstream distribution. I mean, Core. but it needs to be there for us to signal, right? Like, BIP8, BIP9 is not us voting and saying we want this or that. It is miners signaling that we recognize this change is coming. We recognize this transaction type will be somewhere in our mempool. And yes, we will include it in our next block. We won't get knocked out. It's as simple as that. And I think there's been a lot of confusion. And I think also this kind of goes back to the scaling wars too, of, like, what that even means. And I do think in with the Taproot activation, we saw a little bit more of a healthy and balanced debate on like activation methods and approach, you know, optimistic versus versus not. And I think that's been an improvement, but I still think there's a lot of confusion and almost this sort of default answer in people's minds that, oh, well, miners are going to vote on this. And like, that's that. And it's just like, take that from your mind, please. If you take nothing else away from this conference.
You're saying you don't like the way that pools are.
It's not a responsibility that I think pools should have. I think pools do need to signal to the market that, hey, yeah, we recognize this change is coming. You know, you're not going to get booted from this block because of what you're transacting on. But there's a conception that like the pools are determining the course of Bitcoin development. I think that's incorrect.
The biggest barrier for us is protocol developers getting their shit together on what proposal they want to activate, right? Like, and I say that a little bit tongue in cheek, but seriously, as a company and not speaking for the whole Lightning Network, but being familiar with how Lightning companies think, right? Like we are downstream of the capabilities available in the Bitcoin protocol, right? So like when Taproot was like, obviously everybody at Lightning Labs was very interested in following the Taproot, discussion and activation and everything. And when, but we weren't actually actively developing Taproot into BTCD and LND because it was kind of like, well, it might not happen and we don't want to waste effort doing this stuff. We have other priorities, blah, 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 blah. But like literally the second the Taproot locked in and activation was assured, like we started building with it immediately, right? Like LND, I think, had on-chain Taproot wallet support, within like a couple months after activation. Like I think it was the next release, right? That was like a huge priority and something that we, moved on immediately and then built the Taproot assets protocol based on that, did Taproot channels. Like we are, we're fully on board with everything. And I think the same thing is kind of true with, a Covenant soft fork. Like we are watching very closely. Lalu's been talking about it, tweeting about it, giving presentations about kind of the stuff that he would like to do with it. We can't really do anything until it's like, okay, this is coming, right? But once it's locked in and it's like, this is actually happening, we're going to push the boundaries as far as we possibly can. And we'd be really, really excited. Yeah, shoot.
So we have the bits.
I'll repeat this.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
What's happened?
Yeah, I mean,
PR's open for review. What's happening?
Until like the 18th of December, we had a $900 billion lawsuit.
Yeah. Oh, I totally get it.
Mm-hmm. So I'm still going to look at it, but there's some people who don't want.
Yeah, and I apologize if what I was saying. Okay, I didn't mean to come off as being like we're waiting. Okay.
But to the extent that you guys do have any protocol developers not named in the lawsuit on board, like I think that says Oliver, he's great.
Oh yeah, huge fan.
Great guy. Mm-hmm. I have enjoyed hanging out with him. But if these guys can just nudge you up.
Mm-hmm.
These things need review. We still have a technical hurdle to get over before we actually do that.
Yep.
And once we are to that vision, I agree. Taproot was a big mobilization. I think some strong, good actors from the OpTech community and Viral at the time, AJ, Steve, I think you might not sure. They organized a big.
Yep. Yep. I remember I participated in one of them. Huh?
Yeah.
It was great. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, no, I totally get your point. Okay. Yeah, I mean, I totally get that I think, trust me, within the LND ecosystem, we understand more than anything else how the scarcest resource is review time and review hours on PRs. Mm-hmm. Yep.
Will suggest that I ask, say, someone close to core,
who would you suggest look at it?
Well, so there's multiple problems, right? For one problem is no one is obligated to do anything. So if none of the protocol developers are interested, this is one of the more common things. Like one of the, I think, worst reviews you can get on something that you propose is, that's just not interesting to me. You know, I don't even want to look. So there's no guarantee that anyone will even find it interesting. Beyond that, I would say, like, related to the chilling effects, I think that one of the problems is we're not cypherpunk enough anymore. Like, we need more anonymous developers. I think that at least protocol developers should be lawsuit proof. They should be wrench proof. Yeah, see, this is the problem. The developers are paying their taxes and they're doxing themselves. It's like, yeah. Yeah, so I think that's another interesting, potentially long-term game theoretical problem to deal with. It's like, I don't fault anyone for caring about their own safety. And so, and this is another thing, if you're going to contribute to the ecosystem, I mean, just look at, we got one guy who's trying to protect his privacy, and kudos to him. I was doxxed a long time ago and kind of wrench attacked, and I had to decide after that happened, after I had a physical attack, am I going to disappear because that's the safest thing to do, or am I going to spend a ton of resources to try to improve my privacy and security and then continue being able to contribute, you know, with my name and my face and so on? It's like, these are like real kind of life and death problems that people are having to deal with in this space. Like there's real risks that are being taken. And so I don't fault anyone for hesitating and not wanting to become a target because they stuck their head out.
Yeah. Another thing that I'll say to John's point though about allocating review hours is that, you know, a year ago, it seemed like there were credibly, I think I wrote at the time, like 7 different proposals that were all being discussed. Right. And so it was kind of like, you know, does it make sense to spend, you know, scarce? And I think this is not just a Lightning Labs question, but for anybody in Bitcoin, you know, that could be capable of credibly reviewing a PR like that. Kind of like, does it make sense for me to review all of them if I'm scarce, or should I just wait a little bit and see if kind of the field narrows down to a couple? I do think that, you know, like I think CTV and CheckSig from Stack are kind of the front runner right now. I think that field is meaningfully narrowed down to where like it could make sense to actually like take a plunge and get in. And I think the other thing that would, you know, convince core developers to spend to some of their scarce time, you know, reviewing these PRs is seeing the application developer interest as well. And seeing there being like actual demand of like, oh, because, you know, that you, what you want to say is, I reviewed this PR, I helped progress, you know, the soft fork and get it locked in. You don't want to say, I spent 2 days reviewing this PR, you know, I helped rebase a bunch of stuff and then nobody cared, right? That sucks. Nobody wants to do that. So I do think there's a little bit of kind of a critical mass effect where you want to see people building on these things. You want to see it activated in Signet. You want to see other people reviewing it to your point, but then it should be something that over time, there's kind of like a little bit of a shelling point. I'm like, okay, these are the ones that we're doing. These are the ones that everybody signed off on. And that's when kind of, you know, the business community can say, oh, okay, it looks like the protocol devs want this. Like, we should wrap our minds around, you know, what's coming here and kind of prepare for an activation.
Just bring them up here.
No, it's okay. And I was talking to some people who are proponents of Taproot, and I said, you know, it seems like people in the community is in a way waiting for you guys to position yourselves and signal support. They said, that would be a very bad idea. Don't wait for us. Yep. And the other criticism of what you said, is there industry demand? So I'm 100% on board with what you're saying.
Will tells me, because he moved to New York recently, and he been going to the New York Bit Devs, and he says a common topic there is, who should review these PRs?
Yeah, it actually is timely. It's Chatham House rule, so can't say who, but you merged the PR for CTV, and that was a conversation at that BitDevs, was who merged it and then who was in the comments. And so just to kind of jump on your point there, John, like who is going to be taken like seriously in the eyes of the people that seem to be like hard power for moving forward with a potential soft fork? Because based on some of these conversations, like James, for example, not to give your whole like pedigree, but like your former core, former chain code, like pretty strong pedigree there. But it seems like I think there's just a dissonance between like who's allowed to merge things and work on things and who's not.
It's not the mergers. Like, I think anyone who's been a long-term established protocol developer can weigh in. For example, that's why I mentioned Olivier at Lightning. Yeah. Anyone who's been around in the space longer the better. And that's why I mentioned with the BIPs that co-authors can help lend credibility to new BIPs for the same reason.
Okay.
I would say counterpoint that shouldn't matter at all. Yeah. And I would actually prefer that BIPs be submitted anonymously.
Yeah, I kind of think that it's rather than trying to be like who are the decision makers, it's kind of like how do we get enough people to where it's over enough people reviewing it to where it's overwhelmingly like, oh, this is obviously, you know, good. We've had enough eyeballs on it, right? It shouldn't be like, and I think that probably starts bottom up because the people who, you know, have the most clout, I think by definition are also the people who are the busiest and have other competing priorities.
And the most at risk. I mean, Bitcoin is about solving a coordination problem at the end of the day. And I think it extends to this here because, you know, to that point of course you want folks with pedigree and a reputation is the way I think of it, you know, writing good code and bringing in, you know, good criticism to that of others. But to Jameson's point, like there needs to be some room for, you know, new blood in that sense that will get just as critical views on them as well. I mean, our community is not known for being warm and fuzzy, you know, but I do think that there's an element too of like, especially as we grow larger and the risks to changes to Bitcoin, both economically and, you know, from an OPSEC perspective for those who are doing it grow, I think there does need to be some considerations around that. And it's tough because I think we're also kind of under the gun for some changes as well. As Bitcoin grows, it only gets like faster and further away.
No, ossification is real. Yeah, like, I don't think anyone debates whether or not ossification is inevitable. We only debate whether or not it's already happened.
Yeah, and certainly, like, I should hope that ossification does not happen for a while. This is software; you always need to be maintaining it. But there will come a point in which it goes into maintenance mode, and I hope that is not soon because there's a lot of work to be done, and the project is not near to completion. But I do think that, like, right now, we're feeling a lot of pressure that we hadn't previously felt with, you know, ETFs and a lot of, you know, serious big dogs in the room, you know, from other spaces that we used to, I mean, I remember posting on forums, you know, much younger than now of like, oh man, you know, what if the government does this? And it's like, oh shit, like, what if the government does this, dude? Like, you know, and that's a very different feeling when you're working on these things. You know, and from our side, especially on the mining stuff, we interact with, you know, energy utilities and stuff like that. And so we definitely feel it. And to some extent you want to be a good citizen in the general sense of like, you don't want to be, especially in mining, like you don't want to be create too much noise or what have you. But when it comes to the code side, it's a lot more of a gray area where like you can see where there's, you know, active cases against developers writing code that, you know, historically we viewed code as a First Amendment, you know, protected activity. And that's not the case anymore. That's terrifying. And I think, you know, that's going to seep into the core Bitcoin protocol and not just, you know, these other, you know, adjacent things.
If I can go back to a much earlier question that you asked, one thing that I did learn this week that I thought was really interesting was, you know, I think a large part of the chilling effect of this kind of conversation has been like, oh, you know, but the ETFs and, you know, Strategy and, you know, Coinbase are going to be against whatever soft fork we do, right? Like they're just going to be against it. And then you had the guy, the Coinbase custody guy up here on stage be like, oh yeah, we think it would be great, right? Like we would love to see, yeah, like we think it would be great to see, you know, more capabilities in Bitcoin. And, you know, whatever you think about Udi, I think the smartest thing that Udi has ever said is he was talking in the same vein about BlackRock. I don't remember when, maybe like last year sometime. And he's like, you guys don't understand. The number one thing that Larry Fink wants to be able to do is to go on to CNBC and be like, buy more of my iBit shares now because Bitcoin's about to have smart contracts, right? Like he wants a catalyst to be able to go out and sell to the world, like buy more Bitcoin. So I do think that that's a little bit of, you know, there shouldn't be this kind of fear of ghosts of, you know, big entities that will shut things down before they even get started. To Jameson's point, we should have some, you know, confidence and have some agency and just going out and doing things. And I think we would be surprised at, you know, how on board most people are and how little resistance actually would be able to pop up.
Do not ask, you know, who is going to allow me.
Yes.
Ask who is going to stop me.
Powerful.
Very based. Are you going to stop me?
Yeah. What?
Just sitting there. You've got experienced coders all up in this room. Somebody just look at it. Okay, what are you guys actually afraid of? Just merge it in your own client. Look, it's open source. Go run the client. Okay, look, we just ran this poll in the chat earlier. 94% of people in this room who responded to that poll said if CTP would be activated on December 1st of this year, you'd all be for it. What are you afraid of?
It's the bubble, you're right.
It's the bubble talking.
Yeah, it is the bubble
yes.
talking.
Who's, yeah, like I said, I think pretty much everyone in this room wants to see innovation continue. And if, what are we afraid of? I think the answer has kind of been percolating. Like we're afraid of everyone else. What are they going to think? What are they going to do?
You got coins on both sides of that split.
Yeah, I mean, pain splits are to be avoided.
Now you got the ordinals lost. People. You said airdrop in different words.
Yeah.
Well, if you're going to do polls, I think what you really want to ask is, let's say somebody decides to activate CTV on December 1st. Are you willing to put your entire life savings behind a CTV opcode right then? Because if it's not enforced, it's gone. And that is a little bit more skin in the game than just saying yes on a poll.
We can do questions. I see hand back there.
Thanks. Actually, that's funny because speaking of echo chambers, I'm just looking at, Charlie, your post where you're accidentally typed in rock. One of the things I couldn't help but notice was that, you know, Luke-JR, which is, you know, very, very notable person in the Bitcoin core space, apparently thinks, you know, like this conference is run by scammers and attackers hijacking Bitcoin. So I'm just kind of curious, you know, like this is not some random nobody, as we seem to have heard. He's very involved in the BIP process, you know, talking about all this improvement. So what exactly is the, like, the strategy to reach out to people that's outside of this bubble that we're all trying to push for all these changes for?
I don't know. I'm in the business of trying to make the top of funnel to Bitcoin as big as possible. That's been my view. I do, you know, I say, Jameson, you know, you say this is a bubble, but that also makes me wonder, like, if someone were to just do something, then, like, what actual technical capabilities or actual real pushback outside of this bubble do you think we'd actually see? Like, would we just see more mean tweets for a month or two?
Well, I mean, like, in general, especially if you're pushing a soft fork, you know, I would say Jeremy Rubin probably had the worst experience. So
here we are championing CTV though.
Yeah. I mean, it's Jeremy season.
Yeah. It's Jeremy season.
You know, the worst thing is that you spend years of your life trying to champion an improvement and everyone just tells you to fuck off. Then you fuck off and then you come back.
You come back and you get to open the conference.
For a good answer to that question, I would recommend looking up Christian Decker's Bitcoin +++ talk from last year in Austin, because he talked about the experience of trying to push APO and like what to learn from it. And I thought it was instructive and well done.
Yeah, I mean, I think you also have to realize that the vast majority of efforts to improve Bitcoin are rejected. And I'm not just talking about the protocol. The vast majority of pull requests, last time I checked, get rejected to Bitcoin Core. And probably the vast majority of BIPs, you know, get rejected and never get implemented. And so that's actually, that's why we need people who are willing to just do things and they're willing to get rejected and fail and hopefully continue trying. Otherwise, the developer ecosystem will eventually wither. If all the developers who are interested in building on Bitcoin and extending the protocol functionality eventually come to consensus that there's no point even trying, then they'll move on to other things.
Good question back there.
Thank you. So just on the topic of like betting on chains and betting on coins. So obviously betting on the chain split is like no one wants that, right? But Polymarket only a few hours ago launched a CTV and CAF market. Like seriously, only a few hours ago.
Was it someone in here? You don't have to dox, but...
no clue, but like me personally, I'm a big fan of both CTV and CAT. And I think, I have the feeling that especially with CTV and maybe CAT as well, we're all in favor. But like no one wants to really push. So at least me personally, I think the Polymarket market coming up is a great thing. I'll be betting, and I'll be curious to hear what you guys think on a non-destructive way of betting money on which shot fork to act it.
Is that MEV?
No, I think that's a really good question, because one of the things, at least on the BCAP side, we try to do is measure, like, how do you measure consensus? It's really, really hard. And, you know, I was a little bit of hate towards BIP8, BIP9, but like it's kind of the best tool we have, you know, for that final check. And the things like Polymarket, and I think what the fork out WTF, you know, from yesterday, like these are other methods to sort of measure that consensus. And I think it's helpful because people are putting money where their mouth is. You know, to do that, it's always going to be imperfect. You know, there is no voting in Bitcoin. There is, you know, we are not going to take a poll of every Bitcoin user. It's impossible. But I think having just another measuring stick is going to be helpful to build support. You know, and some people will respond better to, hey, you know, some people are betting on this versus, oh, somebody's favorite dev said they liked it too, right? Like, and now you have two paths to get to that.
Yeah, I mean, everyone who works on trying to improve Bitcoin is betting. They are spending their time and betting that eventually that will pay off and you know, get accepted. Also, kind of going back to one of the other questions about you know, scammers and attacking Bitcoin, everyone who tries to change Bitcoin is attacking Bitcoin. Everyone who tries to prevent change to Bitcoin is also attacking Bitcoin. Really, like, this is such a multifaceted ecosystem with so many different perspectives of its participants. There is no global consensus on what Bitcoin is. You know, wasn't that a question? I forget if it was this weekend or last weekend. Like, what is Bitcoin?
It was someone over here and asked the GWRT panel.
Yeah. What is Bitcoin? I don't know. We're trying to figure that out. This is the process of us trying to figure out what Bitcoin is. And it's a messy process. But, you know, I find that like the governance aspect and the continual evolution or attempt to evolve this protocol is how we try to figure out what Bitcoin is. Because it's very clear that there's not consensus on, you know, is Bitcoin digital gold? Is Bitcoin peer-to-peer cash? Is Bitcoin a distributed database for my JPEGs? You know, it is a sufficiently complicated enough protocol and network that people use it for different things, and people are able to come up with their own narratives that may conflict with other people's narratives of what it actually is. And that's why we all argue about how it should or should not change. But that's part of the fun, right?
To the betting market question, you know, that's a big effort in measuring, you know, before we actually go and try and activate something, like measuring consensus and measuring, you know, how many people are in support. And that's obviously a really tough thing to do with a global online community, and like there's a bunch of efforts in terms of making that measurement civil resistant. So one thing that Jay and I were talking about just as like a spitball idea yesterday, who runs, like how many of you run a publicly available Lightning node with like an alias? So one thing about a publicly available Lightning node that we were talking about yesterday is like you have Bitcoin locked up in those channels, right? Like that's you're provably a holder. You have actual access to Bitcoin. And so it would be kind of interesting if this cycle, if a way of measuring support would just be people with publicly available Lightning nodes adding to their alias, like upgrade CTV and check sig from stack, because that actually is something that like we could measure, right?
Like it's a BIP 10.
Yeah, right. Or I don't even know what number it would be. This was like a spitball idea, but like that is the hardest question, I think, is, and something that consistently is seen from core developers is like, how do we know that everybody wants this? How do we have any idea? And then there's all the kind of circles of like, well, how do we know that this mechanism is actually trusted and can't be spoofed by people that we don't like? And how do we know this one? At least then it's like, we do have, you know, tens of thousands of provable holders and active Bitcoiners running public Lightning nodes.
And to your subversion, the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but proof of node isn't a thing. I mean, yeah. You can have those proxy fake nodes that just query from
right.
other nodes.
At least with a Lightning node, like you have like a provable UTXO that's like been around for, you know, a couple of years or something.
Yeah, but I mean, I'll push back and say once again that I think that's the wrong question. It shouldn't be how many people want it. It should be, is this useful functionality that won't harm the people who don't care about it or don't want it? Now, you know, from the protocol level perspective, I think the question is going to be who cares enough to review the code? And what I've been hearing more recently, even long term, is who's going to, at the protocol level, buy in to maintain it. I think that that's one of the bigger questions, you know, within Bitcoin Core at least, is, you know, if we're taking on, you know, essentially new technical debt that we have to maintain in perpetuity, is this change simple enough for us to be willing to pay that, or is it complicated enough that nobody is willing to raise their hand?
Speaking of raising hands, I feel like we've talked for an hour almost now, I think. And this has been a long-ass conference. We had a very aggressive programming schedule. And I feel like we can probably drop it here and go drink beer upstairs.
And debate what Bitcoin is with alcohol.
Yeah, with alcohol off camera, because we can only say so much on camera. And then we can have a few drinks and hear what we really think. And yeah, so anyway, give it up for these guys, the participants, yourselves. Will and I and Colin, who could not be here, have absolutely loved organizing this conference. Thank you all for coming.